We're live. Episode 28, Rector Radio. Got the normal intro, but we got Mando doing it today. We have OSF had a family emergency, so we're going to be missing him today. Hope everything's okay. But Mando, why don't you introduce our sponsor before we get into the show today, and then we'll get things started.
Yeah, so our sponsor is Rollbit. They are one of the most well-known crypto casinos out there. Recently been making a big push into trading futures. You can trade leveraging them over up to 1,000 times across a range of different majors and altcoins. They also have a flat fee feature, which they've just brought out so the profit share is less onerous. We've been using it. I know KBM uses it. I've been a big user. Other than that, they have a lending platform, an NFT marketplace, and just general degenerate stuff if you want to do casino and sports betting.
Yes, sir. So, we're missing OSF today, but we got G-Money joining us in a little bit here. What else is going on? You're at NFT Lisbon because you live in Lisbon.
I was in me and Obi were actually in Madeira for a couple of days, and then we got caught in some random storm, like one of the worst storms hit Madeira in years. And then Obi got a family emergency. So it was like a terrible, terrible trip for us to the island of Madeira. But then I've come back. Lisbon today was good. You're missing out. Like the spirit of NFTs is still alive, KBM.
I need to get there.
I know.
I mean, what's it like? Are you doing conferences, shows? Who's all out there? Like,
yeah, everybody? It's these European ones are always a bit better because they're a bit smaller and you get to have like, I don't know. I just tend to find the conversations a little bit easier. You're not always like running across town to get to the next thing. It's always like in a smaller venue and like you're able to have bigger conversations. But we have like a rec show event tonight near the bridge in Lisbon, which is going to be fun. Nice. Yeah, so we got a big 24 hours, but I'm solo. OSF has left me hanging. So
yeah, you're shouldering the weight right now. Look at the rec show. You're going to be doing all the intros, taking all the shots with everyone.
I know.
Getting wrecked. So I mean, you got a lot.
Getting wrecked, what's up with the mic?
The mic. Oh yeah. So I taped some shit on it. I don't know what's going on there. I'm glad you pointed it out.
Yeah.
I need to buy a new
As a leverage.
I left a lot of the pieces to the Rodecaster in Miami, which I'm not in any longer. So yeah, I mean,
something just doesn't add up. You know, the P&L shots plus taped
on
mic.
Yeah, no, I know. It's crazy, right? I'm just LARPing my way through this.
But love it.
Buy a new one. I finally did buy the right cord today.
Wow, that must have set you back.
For 2 weeks in a row. So I mean, we might be on the technological breakthrough. You know. It might be soon. Yeah. But I think it adds character, this tape microphone. But anyway, what about the markets, man? Anything else going on? I mean, the markets look like shit to me.
When don't they, man?
I mean, if they look good, I would tell you they look good. They don't look good.
They look good for you for about 4 hours, and then you switch bearish again.
I mean, is it time to be bullish? It looks like shit.
I think the stock market does look a little bit precarious. I still quite like crypto here.
Yeah. Stocks are like whatever. I mean,
whenever ETH Bitcoin dips, I just buy. I think it's still a good accumulation.
They're really illiquid, especially today. It's like really fucking illiquid. But
yeah,
when you get rid of all the exchanges, all the market makers, and all the onboarding routes, I don't really understand what institutions or big players are going to just randomly start spraying and buying here, but maybe I'm wrong. So I'm expecting 20% down minimum.
Oh, really?
In the next couple months.
Couple
maybe
of days.
Tomorrow. I don't know.
Sell it all today.
Yeah, sell it all today. Now, my meme guy, Jaden, he's been crushing it with these AI memes. Pretty fucking hilarious. But let me get the first Rollbit coupon code since we forgot to do that. It's GMoney829. And so go ahead and claim that GMoney829. But anyway, let's bring in G Money now, since he's backstage, and we'll begin our little chat.
Yo, what's up? How are
What's up, dude? Thanks for coming on. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I must say the music, awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. I love listening to the music. Way better than the Twitter space music.
Our production team is top notch from Rug Radio, man. You can watch us live on Rug Radio YouTube right now too. Oh, I forgot OSF's job, all these little things. I always forget.
I know.
There's a lot of stuff, you know.
He's just the tech guy. He doesn't say a word for the whole hour, but he just does the tech.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know what we're going to do for the Rollbit spins later, but we'll come to that.
Wait,
one.
You didn't think of that ahead of time?
No.
Okay,
we'll see how that goes. So I was speaking to KBM before you actually came on backstage, and he was like, you guys have a very similar background, both kind of prop traders from New York. And you've only had like one conversation, it sounds like. So I'm glad we can all swap some stories here. But yeah, clearly it's been a bit of a journey for you. Like when people must think about you now, if you came into NFTs today, you're probably thinking, oh, is that guy who owns a fashion brand and is, you know, a builder. And actually, that's not really kind of how you really entered the space, or probably how you're even looking at it. So I think it's good to kind of go back. And also, you've had a real journey compared to us. So yeah, it's great to have you on, and we can get into it.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I think this would be a really fun convo. The first and only time Keyboard Monkey and I really interacted face-to-face was in the back room of Carbone back in, I think it was 2021.
We don't want to know what goes on there.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The Carbone dinner.
Yeah. Famously, KBM's last.
My last too. So that's fine.
Oh, okay. God, you get banned from the Carbone. We don't need to go.
I'm still standing.
Yeah. No. That we talked. We only talked for a couple minutes. I feel like. But yeah. You had a background as a trader. Then you famously bought the Punk Ape, right? And then you started these brands. So, I mean, like, we'd love to just start out with, like, your trajectory and how it all started, how you got into NFTs. Now the journey started from trader to builder to, you know, fashion brand to deals with Adidas and all that shit. Like, you've done a lot of cool shit so far, so we'd love to get into that.
Yeah, cool. So I guess I'll start a little bit on the trading a little bit and first how I got into NFTs, and then that probably provides a little more clarity and where I ended up going. So, you know, I traded prop. I was long short US equities, and I traded with a group where we each kind of specialize in certain different sectors. And even before I was trading short term, I had like long-term theses that would work out, right? So one of them, I specifically remember in 2003, one time I was on the subway, I was interning in New York City, and I just noticed that everybody had these white headphones in their ears. And that's back when the MP3 market was massively fragmented. And I was like, oh, all right, cool. Well, it seems like, you know, no matter what your age was, you could have been like a professional, a kid, a teenager, like everybody had the white headphones in. And that was obviously the original iPod. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to buy Apple stock. And Apple was trading, I don't know what it is because it's split a couple of times since then, but Apple was trading at 10 bucks. I bought the $20 calls for 62 cents a share each. And I bought them as far out as I could. So it was around 18 months later, I sold them for 49 bucks a share each. And I was like, holy shit. I'm like, that was awesome. I'm also like 20 years old at the time. So I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I'm like, I want to do this for a living. And fast forward a couple years, you know, I end up starting to trade prop. And I focused, there were two like areas, like we were all generalists. So we would trade whatever had movement. But interestingly enough, the first time I really looked at Apple stock in depth for the first time in years was 2 days ago, when I'm like, ah, man, there. Because I used to trade Apple events all the time. And we'd be sitting there based off of the live feed, because the video feed is always delayed more than the blogs. So you would be reading like The Verge or whoever was live blogging the event to trade off of that. Right. And so I was like, man, it probably makes sense to buy some puts here, because I just don't think they're going to live up to it. But we would live and die by these events. And I'm sure KBM, you probably really that probably really resonates with you. Right. Because you're always looking for help. But I always, you know, and I always understood consumer discretionary really well as like certain areas of tech. Right. So consumer tech, semis, I understood pretty decently certain parts of the semi industry. And so, you know, consumer discretionary was something that I always understood, even before I started short-term trading, with, you know, the whole just, I think part of it is just being really observant, right? And so then fast forward to COVID, right? Like I buy a PlayStation, I download Fortnite, I start playing Fortnite, and I'm playing with my friends and their nephews, and these kids, 12 years old, are like, what skins did you buy? And they're spending 10 bucks, like, and they're changing. They have all these skins in their account. And I'm like, holy shit, like that kid is 12 years old today. 10 years from now, he'll be 22 and he'll be totally okay with owning a purely digital asset. So I'm like, there's this super cycle here. I don't know how to take advantage of it, right? And like, I didn't know what NFTs were. You're talking about March of 2020. I'd been in crypto since 2017, and I sold in early 2018 because I'm like, this just feels unsustainable in its current pace. But I always kept an eye on it. And then, you know, when the Fed basically said that they were buying everything, I wired a ton of money over to Coinbase, bought a bunch of Ethereum, and started going back down the rabbit hole. But it wasn't until, you know, and I was relearning like DeFi, and, you know, I got like caught in like the sushi hack and like all these, you know, Yearn and like DeFi summer. And then at the end of DeFi summer, I had heard about NFTs. I look into NFTs and I'm like, whoa, I'm like, this is your skin on Twitter. Like, this would be really, really valuable. And then I just start going down that rabbit hole. And especially really early on, because I remember I would go into different projects, and I said, okay, I'm going to put X amount of dollars into the space. I'm going to go, my thesis was, I'm going to put $100,000 into NFTs, $5,000 into each project. And at the time, $5,000 was a lot, right? Like, I would go in and sweep the floor and people like, whoa, like, yeah. So, like, spread your bets out. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. I was like, yeah, I got it. What else do you guys like? And I was like going from project to project, trying to find things that I thought would be historically relevant, because at the time I was like, this is for me and what I had available for myself. That was the best risk reward trade I could make on the planet. Right. It was, the thing I always loved about crypto is that it's an option that doesn't expire. And then if I can get an option on that option, then, you know, the most I'm going to lose if I'm wrong is 100%. So I'll lose the bet. But if I'm right, the convexity on that trade and the amount of money that I'll make if I'm right will more than outweigh any of the risk associated with it. So I initially saw it as a trade, and it, you know, and that was kind of like, that took me to the beginning of 2021 and when I bought my Punk. And when I bought the Ape, you know, I started tweeting obviously with the Ape, because I was like, yeah, this is going to be my digital identity. And it like within 3 months, it became really apparent to me that this was going to be bigger than even I thought. Because up until that point, I was like, this is a trade. Right. And this is, I'm going to, I remember when I bought it, I was like, I'm going to sell the first CryptoPunk at, you know, at auction at like Sotheby's or Christie's 5 years from now. Right. And, you know, lo and behold, it happened 5 months later with Larva Labs. But that was my initial thesis. But like in March of 2021, I realized that this was going to be way bigger. And I was like, this tech, like every company, every industry in the world will be somehow implementing this tech into their business flow, whether, you know, as a collectible or as some sort of process manager or whatever. And I was like, if, you know, I'm one of the few people that understand this inside and out, and I, you know, have been building like this really good brand around myself, that, you know, I'm in the right spot at the right time, where I don't even know if I'll ever be in this position again, right? And that was in March of 2021. And that's when I stopped trading. That was the last time I traded, was in March of 2021, because I said the stock market will always be there. But, you know, the chances that I am at the forefront of a technological revolution like this is probably never going to happen again. So I owe it to myself to at least give it a shot, right? Like, because I can always go back to trading stocks. And that's kind of was like just my beginning into the journey of G Money and like working on all the things that I've been working on for the last 2 years.
Can I ask, because there's something maybe we could go back to first principles about here, because I think it's really interesting speaking to a trader, but the way that you speak about stuff, and it's the way I think KBM would speak about stuff and Ovi would speak about stuff, is convexity. Like, always positioning yourself and your life for convexity. Do you maybe want to go in what that really means? Because if you're not a trader, you might not understand that as a concept. And like, you're clearly familiar with things like options, and like maybe work out like what that kind of means for people and why, how they could maybe replicate it.
Yeah. So I think, like, I guess I think when you talk to a lot of traders, they always think of things, and like good traders, right? People that can make it a sustainable business. Cause I think a lot of people say that they're traders, but, you know, they like the glory of being a trader. But at the end of the day, being a trader, it's pretty boring, right? Like, you're sitting there and you're waiting for the majority of the time, right? And so that's why, like, when I meet young guys and they're like, yeah, I want to be a trader, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. I'm like, I lived that life for a long time. Like, it's great, right? Like, the money is good, but you're always thinking about things in terms of risk, right? And when I think of, like, convexity and anything that I do, it's like, how can I get the most impact for the action that I do. I like to be as efficient as possible with my decision making, right? So from a trader, it's like, well, what is, you know, we could have the same idea saying, okay, Apple is going to go down over the next 45 days or up, right? But we can express that trade in a million different ways. And one of them will be optimal in terms of for the risk that you're taking on, which one will have the best payoff. And we can all structure the trade differently and you'll have different results based on that. And I think that that's just probably because I was just trading for so long. I always just think of, okay, what do I think is the best risk reward in terms of use of my time, happiness overall, right? And then profitability, right? And it's like some mixture of those three things of saying, what am I willing to risk on that trade in terms of time, in terms of money, in terms of attention in order to do stuff. And, you know, it's been evolving obviously over time. And part of it too is, you know, I think at the point that I'm at now is like, I could have ridden off into the sun. Like I have a really nice bag of NFTs and I could have just been like, all right, cool. Like I'm going to trade shit coins and I'll be able to make money. It just, for me, it wasn't really fulfilling for me anymore. And it's like, I want to do something that's bigger than that. And that's kind of like how I've structured my life. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to kind of go down that rabbit hole. And I'm sure KBM has similar thoughts in terms of anytime he makes a decision, whether it's your time, attention, or bank account, right? Like you're factoring in a version of all those things.
Yeah, of course. And it's interesting since we have such a similar path and the route you've taken, I think to myself like, wow, what if I had taken that route as well or something similar and tried to create, because we were on the beginning cutting edge of this kind of technology that everyone's integrating in every brand, like you said, rather than just trading. Like you said, the stock market's always here. It's just waiting around. It's like, is this the best use of my time? So with that being said, like you've taken the keys and you started up the Ignition in this different route. So where, like, how did that begin? And what do you see for yourself with this brand? Like, what is 90cc, the brand? I mean, how did you pivot from trading to this? Like what were the jump you made, the big one?
So I think it was slow. It was definitely, I had that aha moment, right, in March of 2021, where I'm like, I'm going to really lean into this. Then it's, you know, like the power of, I guess, manifestation. Within the next 30 days, somebody from Adidas reaches out to me in my DMs. It's like, hey, I love what you're doing. I'm on the Web3 team at Adidas. Do you want to chat? I had no idea whether this person was working there or not. I'm like, but it does, like, what if this person really does? What, like, it's 20 minutes of my time. Turns out the person did work at Adidas. That ended up leading to the Into the Metaverse drop, which came out in December of 2021, where myself, Bored Apes, and Punk's Comic were all partners. And, you know, at that point, it was like, all right, cool. Well, I'm also a very active angel investor, right? And so I would listen to a ton of pitches. And I'm like, I was listening to pitches. And I'm like, it's not really that exciting to me. And it's kind of boring me. And I have this vision of something that I want to see made that isn't being made in the moment. So why not just give it a shot? Maybe there are other people that want it as well, right? And so a lot of that stemmed from the fact of I'm a crypto native. How can I go out in the real world, right? Like people see my CryptoPunk on my PFP and they're like, oh shit, that's an OG, that's a CryptoPunk, you know, this and that. But how do I do that in the real world, right? Like, it's like, I want to buy like a really well-made product, right? So I want to buy something of the equivalent of walking into a luxury store anywhere in the world. But I also want to show that I'm crypto native. And like at the time, there was no, if even you had to buy something that was luxurious, that if you wear it out, like when you're wearing a Dior shirt, people are like, oh yeah, cool, that's a nice shirt. Or you can buy something that's like, let's say NFT merch or crypto merch or whatever, and it's like cheaply made and it's like, yeah, I use this around the house and I work out in it, right? But like, you're not going to go out to the nightclub with it, right? And so I'm like, well, I know I want that. Like I want to wear something that's really nice and well-made and expensive and it makes me feel good and special. But I also wanted to signal that I'm a crypto native, so I don't have to be there and be like, yo, look at my wallet. Look at all these cool NFTs. It's like, oh, that person's in crypto, right? And they're successful, right? And all these things that you can associate with crypto that wasn't being associated with crypto. So that to me is like, I'm like, if I want it, maybe there are other people that also want it, right? And so that was like the first thing, is I wanted to make an aesthetic that I would want to wear. Two is, you know, we chip all the products. So as a consumer of just high priced goods, whether it's a watch, a purse, a pair of sneakers, whatever, like I want to know how many of them exist. Like, what better use for a decentralized ledger than being like, there are exactly X amount of these that exist in the world? Because that affects the resale value, right? As a consumer, like, you know, I know obviously with inflation over the last few years, people were talking about, you know, buying luxury cars, driving them for a couple months and then selling them at a higher price because you know that there's just not that many in existence. So you bring that down to like the consumer level down the stack and it still makes sense. So that was two. And then three, and I think this is where a lot of the magic has been starting to happen, is once we get the product out in the wild, like the gamification and the community building that we've been able to do, that anytime I go to a conference or get pictures of people at conferences and, you know, people are wearing the product, one, proud to wear the product, two, connecting with other people, because I think that that's something that's that 90cc enables, right, is that it allows people that are total strangers to go up to each other and it gives them an excuse to start a conversation, right? Where how many times have you been out, whether it's out to dinner, a nightclub, whatever, where somebody's like, hey, nice jacket. And it just ends there, right? It's like, you guys obviously have something similar in terms of taste. Maybe you have other commonalities, right? And that I think has been something really special that we've been able to do out in the real world. And it's been a really fun evolutionary journey, but it all just comes from the sense of, I just want to do something that I think is cool and hopefully other people enjoy it as well.
It's interesting. It seems quite different though. Obviously there is that complexity in it, in that like if this hits a home run, but it's very different sort of life to being a trader, right? It's not like you're just buying cheap options and waiting. This is like a proper job. It's like properly building. It takes a lot more, a vast array of different like skills. Have you like enjoyed coming into it, or is there something that you have found being a trader has like helped you in doing that?
So I think that the skill set is definitely different, right? I've enjoyed it. The stress is different, right? I think there's the thing about being a trader is I felt like the highs were so high and the lows were so low. You know, I could have like the best day of my career and then the next day I can get up the worst day of my career and it would be, and I would, and still the best days would never outweigh the worst, right?
Like that's just being a trader. That is just being a trader.
And that's it, right? The highs are so high, the lows are so low. I'll say that like my stress is more like, whereas before, like let's say the variance was so high, now the variance is much lower, right? Because at the end of the day, like, you know, there's almost no split second decision that I'm going to make that could make or break my bank account. Because it's like, oh shit, I'm 100 times bigger than I should be, right? Or, well, you know, I entered one extra zero or something, right? And so it's a very different type of stress, but it is really enjoyable. And I will say I personally had this issue where I wasn't finding trading as fulfilling as I did when I was younger. And I think that I feel way more fulfilled in terms of what I'm doing now than, you know, just looking at numbers at a screen all day. Like I was, it just, for me, and I don't judge anybody that like loves it, because I understand like being a trader and the upside of it is great, right? It's amazing. It gets romanticized in movies and TV, on Twitter and everything, but it just no longer had that same effect on me. And I'm talking about like, I'm a kid that I started following the stock market when I was 12. I started investing when I was 14. And I always envisioned like me trading was what I wanted to do when I retired, right? So like I, you know, I started trading like really young and I was like, oh man, I'm basically doing what I want to do. And it just, it ran its course, and that's fine. And I love the entire education. I love all of the opportunities I got because of trading. You know, I am where I am today because of my background in trading and understanding new markets and risk and opportunities. But it just, it ran its course for me, I think.
We have a lot of poker players on the show as well. Like trading kind of reminds me of poker in that sense, is that I think you can fall out of love with it and then you kind of get drawn back into it like many years down the line. Like you still have that skill set. It's still like, you just, it's like riding a bike. You just like suddenly are back into it and you kind of do it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think like if I were like, listen, you're always a manager of risk, right? So I'm always thinking of like, hey, like where is the best place to put my money? And it's more, maybe the next time I start trading, it's more on a longer term basis. And it's not, you know, like I have positions in crypto, right? That I don't day trade, but I'm like, hey, if the risk, if I think the risk reward is like 5x or 3x, or it's like, I'll put a portion of my portfolio into that and I'll just hold it, right? And I'm trading, but it's just on a longer term horizon where I don't need to worry about, oh my God, what is, you know, the SEC doing today to make or break the price, right? So it's just, it's different, but I mean, I like it. I love having that skill set, right? And just understanding markets, I think it's super valuable.
It's funny, because I obviously, we've done building alongside like Ovi, and we have another guy who used to work in finance as well. But like, one thing that we've noticed is that when we work with people who have not worked on a trading floor, because all three of us were on trading floor, like the communication style between us three, and if there's a fourth person, it's like, you guys are acting like you're like shouting at each other with like, no, there's no respect. There's no politeness. Do you also like, do you have that sort of issue? Like communication is just so direct.
It's funny because I laugh about it, because sometimes, like, just to your point of being direct, is sometimes somebody will write this entire email, be like, how was your weekend? And, you know, how's your day going and this and that. And then they ask a question. I'm just like, yes, right? Like, and then I'm like, I'm about to hit send, and I'm like, wait, go back and write, my weekend was good, hope you're doing well. Yes, right? Like, I'll hear from you later. But like, I think that's part of the nature of, you know, the business we come from, where time is really important, right? And if I'm gonna sit there and be like, yes, Mando, how was your day this morning? Oh, by the way, like, I shorted Apple like 10 minutes ago, right? Like, you don't care how my day was, right? Exactly. All you care about is like, when did you short Apple, right? Like, and why? Right. So I get that. It's funny because, but also I think of a lot of it's just different personalities too. And some people respond better to certain methods of communication. But I think as traders in general, you understand that time and attention is money. Right. And so you're just going to be very succinct with your communication.
Yeah. So it's safe to say you're not buying and selling NFTs daily. You're not making short-term trades anymore. You've kind of extrapolated your time frames out to building this business and taking a long-term view on everything. I think like one of the harder things of being a short-term trader is trying to take a long-term view on things. How were you able to shift your mindset? Was it just because now you're working with more people? You're not like a lone wolf. Like, you know, when you're trading, you're more solo. It's just like, has your mindset changed at all? Like you said, stress is way lower.
I think, yeah. I mean, stress is very different, right? It's no longer where if I have three like negative days in a row where I'm like, am I ever going to make money again? Because I think you, as a trader, you always have that existential crisis where you're like, I haven't made money in 3 days. Like maybe like I'll never make money again. Right. At least that's how I always felt anytime. Like I had like 2 days in a row. Right. You know, and like, I think you guys were both smiling. So I know you can relate, but I do think that, you know, extrapolating that time frame and then also, especially the last couple of years that I was trading, is like, for the most part, when you look at like the wealthiest people in the world, none of, like, outside of a couple of hedge fund managers, none of them are traded. They're all long only, right? And so, you know, it's like the dream is to get to a place where you can be long only and not necessarily have to sit there and get super levered to like a 1% move, right? It's like that's always nerve-wracking, no matter how much money you have, right? And so I think it was you, KBM, that put out the tweet a couple of days ago of like, have you ever met anybody that has a short bias, right? That makes money. Was it you that put that?
Doesn't sound
out?
Like KBM.
I didn't. But
I think everyone was silently going for him. Tagged me in
it. Okay. All right. So, but like the thing is, I made, like when I was trading, I made 80% of my money. I made short. Like that was like, yeah. I love shorting stocks, right? Because things, like in the pre-QE era, things would always go down faster than they went up, right? That was generally the rule. QE kind of like really fucked all that up. But that was like my thing. So I'm just like, dude, like, why am I sitting here stressed out trying to make, you know, 3% in a super levered position when like the goal is to like get to like Warren Buffett level and be like, yeah, like, buy and hold, like good business, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like I got that the same velocity, and like I'd rather be long only. It's just much less stressful.
For sure, yeah, it's crazy. Like the uncapped risk of shorting is actually like uncapped now, and in the past, like you could kind of have risk parameters. But yeah, you're right. The stress level of shorting, and I think most of my wins probably come from shorting as well, just from because we have a similar prop background. It's like. The mean reversion and shit like that was just like how we learned in those days. And so, yeah, it's much different and much harder now. And yeah, taking max leverage into these random ass like moves that just have infinite bids because there's just no offers. I don't know. It's interesting. You see it a lot. And even the stock market and like low float stocks and shit like that, that were never possible before. With that being said, like, we might as well get into a little bit of the theme of the show, which is like getting wrecked. So you must have had some big losses, big wins, I'm sure too. But why don't you circle back on any big losses you've had trading or in business and how you overcame them? I'd like to get in the mental side of things and how people think about overcoming the losses, shit like that, that can help the viewers. So yeah, I don't know. You don't have to get numbers. You can if you want, but just talk about some of those moments.
All right. My biggest loss, or I guess my most traumatic loss, I don't know if it was my biggest one, but I remember it so well, was I was short Twitter. And this was, I'm sure you remember, when the day David Faber came out and said that report. So I guess I just fucking led with the punchline. So basically Twitter, I'm not sure if Twitter reported earnings the night before or if there was an analyst report. So RBC, Mark Mahaney, was the best internet stocks analyst on the street. Came out.
Can I just take a moment to appreciate that traders remember every fucking detail from years ago of their trades? Like I can think of all my trades, like to the, like what exactly happened. Like no one else remembers. Like you just think you gave away the punchline. No one in the audience knows that punchline, but you.
but it's so funny because I remember all this. So it's like literally, and trading was, this was maybe, this might be 2016, maybe 2016, 2015. So, Mark Mahaney comes out, downgrades Twitter pre-market. I'm in early. We read the note. We start shorting the fuck out of stock. And I'm the type of trader that I will add to winners. I don't add to losers. Like my biggest losers are when I add to losers, right? So I'll put on a position, and if it's trading against me, that means I'm wrong. But then once I'm right, I start like piling into it. So
downgrades.
Yeah,
same trade.
But that's the way.
That's the style that you learn on when you were good back then. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But there's some people that like, you know, they do that meme reversion where they just keep on adding and they
need
training. I'm like, I don't have the guts for that. Like,
no, I just keep cutting, and then 1,000 paper cuts, and then you get that one massive win. Yeah.
Yeah, and so Mahaney comes out, downgrades Twitter. It's pre-market. It's like 7 a.m. And it's just trending lower. Just keep shorting. And I think it might even be a short sale rule, because I think I was having trouble getting some off because I wasn't at the size that I really wanted to. So I keep on adding. And then all of a sudden, 9:15, 9:16 comes on. I'm like 50, 60 cents in the money. And Twitter's like a $15 stock, $16 at the time. Oh, okay. So I had size on.
Yeah.
I'm reading the sheet. I look at my computer. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I turn on the TV. David Faber just came on saying Apple, Google, Disney, like name every stock in the world, were interested in buying Twitter. And so then Twitter goes from like $14 to like $18 in like the blink of an eye. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And it's Friday. I think it's Friday, right? And like, I'm like, oh, I'm about to have a great day. Go out, like, end the week on like a great fucking win. And it turns from like a great win to like a huge fucking loss. And then like everybody on the desk was short too. So, you know, I had backed a couple of traders and they ended up losing just as much money as I did with smaller positions because they couldn't manage the risk. And it was just like, I was just like, literally, I just couldn't see. And like, usually when those type of trades happen, I just go, I know that if I stick around, try to make it back, I always lose more. And I literally closed the position out, I think at 9:29, I closed down my station, and I just walk out for the weekend because I was like, it's 9:29, the market's about to open. I'm like, I'm done. Like, there's no way I'm going to make this back. And I stopped at McDonald's on my way home.
I've done this before, this same route. Walking the streets of New York at 9:29.
Yeah.
And in the fucking
That's head, what everyone
fucking
does.
I'm getting McDonald's.
Yeah. I'm on my way home. I walk to the McDonald's at 28th and Park. I order like $60 worth of McDonald's. Yeah. And I just like go home.
I even punish myself and sit in McDonald's eating there alone.
But the thing is, there's some truth to that. Right?
It's like, wow, I'm a fucking joke. Just sitting.
But yeah, that was, and then I remember I did not leave my apartment till like Sunday afternoon when one of my buddies is like, yo, come out, like leave. But like, I was just like in the fetal position watching TV, sad as fuck because I lost a ton of money. But I knew that you have to go back into the office on Monday, right? So like, you have to go back in there and find a way. You have to make the money back, right? And so that was, I don't know if that was my biggest loss. It was up there in terms of my losses, but it was one of my more traumatic ones because I was just like, it was like such a good, great winner. And it was one of the best setups I had seen in months. And I was like, I'm going to make a ton of money off this trade. And to have it go from red to green, in like, there was no way to get out.
Yeah. The pre-market liquidity of zero and during news. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, so what do you learn from that and the mental swings? I mean, obviously traders have you have to have a short ass memory. Like you said, you got to walk in there on Monday and you can't harp on it and try to make the money back. You need to go back to what was working previously or else you'll spiral and lose more and more and more. So how do you apply that? And like, were you able to do it? Or how do you bounce back mentally in business nowadays too when something doesn't go wrong?
So I think because of being trained like that in trading so well, is like people literally, I think last week somebody asked me, what's your biggest loss in NFTs? I'm like, I really don't know because I've been fortunate enough to size NFTs pretty appropriately where I haven't taken like a seven-figure loss, right, in like NFT. So it's like there's no, like to me, it's like, oh yeah, like I minted something and it went to zero, right? Like I, you know, put $5,000 into it. Like what, you know, it doesn't necessarily change anything. So it's like, I think as a trader, to your point is you have to overcome that, right? Cause you have to say, all right, that what happened that was out of my control, right? Cause I think as a trader, the only thing you can do is focus on the things that you can control and then hope that, you know, 10 Sigma event doesn't happen. Like that David Faber coming on television, like that, like on the day that it gets downgraded, like that's like the chances of that happening are so slim. Like you have to take that trade every single time. Mm-hmm. Like that is the setup, right? And that was one of those things when I got into crypto, I remember I was like, I don't want to day trade crypto because that means, you know, crypto's 24/7, right? It's like you have to hit your setup every time it happens. Like the good thing about stocks is, you know, every week at 4 p.m., I can go home and like disconnect and not have to worry about stocks till Sunday night when I can start preparing for the next week. But, you know, I don't want to be like, oh my God, ETH is about to break out. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I need to go home from the club to catch this breakout. Like, I just didn't want to do that. So that, like, I was just very inclined to not want to do that when I was, even when I was trading in crypto, right? I guess in terms of like, I think that has helped me a lot in terms of issues and situations of one being like, there's almost nothing outside of maybe like a mint happening when we're dropping a mint. There's nothing that's like time pressing where it's like, this is going to make or break my week, my month, my year, whatever it is that always existed in trading, right? Where it's like, I mean, it's funny. I remember when I first started, there was a trader that said, if you're not uncomfortably big, at least 15% of the time, you're not trading big enough.
And like, the same quote from one of my guys I know.
But we probably got it from the same guy.
It's so, like, if you're not uncomfortably sized up, then you're not trading big enough. You need to take more.
Yeah, time. And so, and like, you know, there were plenty of times when I'm like, you know, you're nervous because you're like, yeah, I'm sitting there and I literally have my key on the sell or the exit button. If they start moving against me, because I want to lose X, I don't want to lose 2X, right? And so it's there's no real situations like that anymore. So it kind of puts things in perspective, which is great. And it's a different kind of stress. But I think trading has allowed me to have like that short memory of saying, okay, when I look back at that situation, what could I have done differently? What could I not have done differently? Learn from it, learn the lesson. And then move on and like forget it, because at the end of the day, if you remember those really like every loss, right? And like I was my win ratio was, I was only right like 55. A good month was like 55%, right? Mm-hmm. An okay month was like 45, and then like break even I think was like 30-ish, right? And so I was wrong almost as often, if not sometimes more often than I was right. And like the key is you just have to like, it's like, what could I have done better in that setup? Okay, cool. Learn from it. The next time I see something similar, just don't like remember that lesson, but don't remember the loss, right? Because if you sit there and you start second guessing yourself every single time, right? Like that's, you know, to the point I was making earlier where it's 3 days in a row and I'm like, holy shit, like is my system like, you know, is it moot now? Like, does it no longer work? All right, no. Okay, like you just have to get back in there and like take that at bat again.
Can I ask something which is maybe I don't know if I even know the answer to this really, or like I kind of want to discuss it even amongst ourselves. But do you think there is still convexity left in crypto and NFTs? Do you still think that people will have those sort of trades left, or have you kind of moved into being a builder because you didn't see that there anymore? Or do you think everyone still listening to this podcast has got a chance to make those trades? And if not, where do you think there is? Like taking away leverage, taking away, you know, just like you said, not being able to sleep at night. Do you see convexity in this market?
I do. I think every time I hear people, I've heard a lot of people say crypto's dead. There's not going to be another super cycle. You know, there's all the money to be made has already happened. Like, those are like, that makes me bullish, because that's like here. Like when people are at like the despair, right? Like that chart where everybody shows this euphoria and this, like that's like the despair talk, right? Of like, you're never gonna make money again. And I'll use an example of, you know, I moved to Puerto Rico in 2017. I met some people that moved down here around that same time, late 2017, 2018. And some of them, like I, like as a trader, I'm really good at momentum. Right. Like I'm not trading big enough size that like I won't be able to get out. Right. Like I'm still small enough because I'm trading my own capital that I'm like, if I can catch the bulk of any move, I'm going to be really happy regardless. Right. But one of the things I noticed was that my friends, so like in 2018, like I sold everything I had that was liquid and I'll be like, I'll be back for the next bull market. So I didn't stick around during that bear, which is when like a lot of my friends that really, really did well last cycle, they stuck around, right? And they were, you know, going around meeting people in deals and like just, you know, whether as an investor or as a token buyer or whatever, right? They did really, really well. So I was like, okay, like again, and kind of like learning, right? Where it's like, yeah, I did really well this last cycle, but okay, when instead of leaving and going back to trading when the bear market hits, it's like, stick around and find the good deals. And, you know, part of it's maybe like building, right? And that's, it's like, for me, I think it's the best use of my time. Not just from a risk reward perspective, but also from like an impact perspective of like, you know, how do I put like, and I'll talk about this selfishly for a second. It's like, when I first got into crypto or to NFTs and I was talking about CryptoPunks, it was like, if I can convince people why a CryptoPunk has value and they could get to the point where like, okay, I see why that has value. Some people would be like, all right, I see why CryptoPunks have value. Nothing else does. But a lot of people would start to get curious of being like, all right, well, how do I find the next CryptoPunks? Right? Like what else is there of value? And they can go as deep down the rabbit hole as they want. And so using that same philosophy, you know, building 90cc is like, if I can convince you why this technology will be useful to you in a way that makes sense, because me telling you is like, oh, digital assets. And like in the future, everything will be digital. Like some people are like, that will never happen in my lifetime. That won't happen, or whatever feedback people give you. But if I'm like, your hat is an NFT and you can now create a connection with somebody else by scanning the hat, and now you guys are connected online, like a lot of people find that pretty cool. And then it's using the tech, right? In a very differentiated way.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that 2 years ago, I think I could have picked a dozen different things, which I think it could be a 10X. And then I did this as a mental model about a month ago. And I really just had like one or two. And I remember just thinking like, is that just a high rates environment? Are we moving? Am I getting too bearish? But I do just think that like building, for example, 90cc, if it works out, it's clearly a 10X plus. That is just where there is a lot of convexity. And this is what me and Ovi did kind of like 18 months ago. We stopped trading our NFTs and then we ended up selling them, a lot of them, this year. But we kind of felt like building was a far more like worthy thing to do. It does just feel as though just in this rates environment, the convexity has gone for so many different things. Like if I was just pick a 10X, this is why people are drawn to things like shitcoins right now, because I don't think I can realistically say in the next year that any NFT which is over one ETH probably does a 10X.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be, it would be really, really unlikely. Or as in, it would be an outlier rather than, right, I can pick the top 10%, we'll do a 10X. And I think that's just the rates environment. It's kind of where we're at. It's just, yeah, just kind of the stuff.
Right. It's funny you say that because it's like, those are the conversations that people have, right? It's like, all right, so we're, let's say, done raising, right? So then when we start the cutting cycle, how low do we cut? Do we cut to zero again? And people are like, probably not, right? So and that then becomes the question of how high does that ceiling go, right? And so I can't say, like, I know the future of how low we're going to go. But, I mean, I think we're all pretty – We're probably pretty close to the top in terms of rate hikes, right? Like I don't really know if we're doing one more if that, but you know, I don't know, right? And so I think when I look at a lot of where I think the next 10X comes from, I think that some of it comes from stuff that hasn't even launched yet, right? Whatever captures the narrative. Because if you use to the question that was just shown on screen, right? And I think one of the things for the parallels, right, from Web3 to trading stocks is there's this book called CanSlim by William O'Neill, right? It's like, I think it's called How to Invest in Stocks. And his method's called CanSlim. And basically his entire thesis is you find stocks before they break out, right? Before they become the leaders of the bull market. Because usually the leaders of the last bull market are not the leaders of the next bull market. So your goal is always to find those leaders before institutional investors find them. And Will O'Neill, he's the founder of Investor Business Daily. He has that book, like How to Make Money in Stocks, I think. And I think he has another book called How to Make Money Shorting Stocks. Both great reads, I personally think, in kind of educating yourself a little bit of how like the street works. But that's like the goal is like maybe like the next NFT project. Like I could have my guess of like what I think leads the next run, but maybe it doesn't even exist, right? Like Bored Apes didn't exist until May of 2021, right? And they were by far the biggest leader last cycle. So I think the key is you just need to kind of see patterns of like what worked last cycle. And like history always rhymes. It doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, right? And see like, oh, like, this is what I'm seeing with this community here. That reminds me of that community. Now there's going to be a lot of false positives. I think people tend to, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you get your bag bias, right? It's like, oh, well I own this. So now I'm going to look for signs of this everywhere. But I would say that probably something like like studying how Bill O'Neill and his system, it just makes sense, right? Is like, and that was like kind of like to kind of bring that even closer is, when I bought CryptoPunks and Squiggles, and especially CryptoPunks really early on, I was like, my thesis was, I think these are going to be historically relevant. If they become historically relevant, that means 50 years from now, every major museum in the world will have them in their collection. Museums are the institutional buyers of art. So if I can get the faster and quicker I can get in before those museums come in, they're going to be establishing that those high marks. And the faster I can get in, the better it is for me, right? And so that was like my thesis there. And that's very similar to like the way Bill O'Neill thinks about his system of you want to find the stocks that will be owned by institutions before the institutions like put on before Fidelity owns it, you want to own it before them because they're going to be the ones that trend the price up. And like the key is trying to do that in whatever space that you're in.
Yeah, so we're still early, you're saying. Punks still have a ways to go. Institutional money coming in.
It sounds
so you have no, you're not exiting anytime soon, that's for sure.
No,
those
I mean,
are like forever bags.
Yeah, I have punks in Undocked wallets that like I haven't sold any. I have a ton of squiggles of which I haven't sold any. I was tweeting about this over the weekend where I can't wait till we get to the infrastructure on NFTs where I can post my punks or squiggles as collateral, take out a loan at like, let's say 3 or 4%, and then immediately stake into staked ETH and collect that spread and collect that carry. That is, let's say, let's call it like the risk-free rate in crypto for lack of a better term on it. And like have, you know, earn some yield on my NFTs. And then what does that do to the value of those NFTs? That, you know, even if it's, let's say, like a really low LTV, right? If you have like $1 million worth of punks, and then you can get whatever, 20%, 30% loan against it and make 1% on that. At least like you're making money off something, right? And you know, you can go as far out the risk curve as you want. But I think that that's probably what I personally think, that that's stuff like that is what's going to spark the next bull run, is like being able to financialize in a way that you can still secure the asset, right? Because it's like, I think these things happen in the real world with, you know, obviously with real estate, with probably at the super high end of the contemporary art market and stuff like that. And like it start when you start to see it happen at scale with digital assets, I think that that's probably where the next bull run probably starts, if I had to guess.
Yeah, we've seen some green shoots of that with like Ben Dow and things of that nature, right? Even Rollbet, our sponsor, does it, but they just do 7-day 0% loans. So you can see people trying to take advantage of that market and trying to, you know, bring the financialization of NFTs to the forefront. I think you're hitting it right with punks being definitely something that I could work with. Squiggles. I think high-end art and NFTs is definitely special and valuable. But then obviously there's a lot of vapor, but there'll be more things that come along for sure.
Yeah.
So, Amanda, you got any more questions before we're going to wrap this up? I got the production team over here telling us we should get into the spins, especially because they might take a little bit.
Let's get into anything the spins. Else? I thought this was really good. I mean, it's nice speaking to like fellow traders. I don't know. There's like a bond of like shared experiences.
Yeah, no, I feel like me and G have to have some private combos. So I can tell we have a lot in common over these things. And I think he's getting me makes me want to leave the trading game, maybe. I might log out right now, guys.
Yeah? You're going to get into the meme game?
Yeah, no, I'm going to start building. No, I mean, like, seriously, though, he does some convincing. There's obviously, I think, these thoughts all the time. Just hard to, like, jump ship and pull the trigger. That's the hardest part, right?
To that point, right, like, the bar, I think as a trader, and I can go over. I don't know if you guys have time as well. But to that part, like, being a trader, the bar is so high to leave the business, right? Because
yeah.
You're like, you technically don't do work, right? Because like you're sitting in front of a screen all day, right? So it's like not necessarily like intense in that sense, but like obviously emotionally intense. So, but, and you do so well that like there's like, because I've gone through periods of like my career where there was like a 12-month period where I almost stopped trading. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, who would pay me? Right? Like,
yeah. What? No transferable skills, right?
Yeah. Like, who would give me, beyond, I can tell you where I think a stock is going to move in the next 5 minutes, right? Like,
yeah.
like where that looks like.
So many traders are caught in that. Right? Like, many traders never leave the game for that. Because
it's like the work is not that hard, like you're saying. It's like you can make money. You're just waiting, sitting here. Yeah. But it's obviously unfulfilling on the back end for sure. I mean, once you've been doing it for a long time, it's like. Yeah, just like, what am I doing every fucking day? Like taking massive leverage in these small moves. Maybe I might be having an epiphany live on screen.
It feels like you are as you came.
Yeah, no, I mean, like a therapy session. All the time, of course, but then the money's like.
Yeah, but then, of course, but then when you do really well, one night, you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm never leaving.
Yeah, I'm back. Like, yeah, it's interesting. Definitely.
So,
Should
I do the final question? Then we do the spins.
Yeah, sure.
So our final question, as always for most guests, is this is Wrecked Radio. What is your advice to our audience to not get wrecked?
Man, I would say always, like, I mean, I guess from a trading perspective, discipline is the number one thing. Like, I've seen a lot of people, again, like to what we were just saying, is like, it seems like a really easy job because all you're doing is sitting in front of a screen and pressing buttons. So it's like anybody can do it. But like I've seen really, really smart people that think they're smarter than, like, it comes down to discipline. It's like if you don't have the discipline to set a stop or set a profit target and take it, right? Because it's at those extreme points that both despair and greed both kick in at either end of that spectrum. You have to have the discipline to say, I'm out. Right. And the difference, you know, especially when you're trading small, you're like, oh, what's the difference between losing $50 and $75? Like, that's a 1.5x increase in risk. Right. Like, that is the difference. You know, it doesn't make a difference between 50 and 75, but it makes a difference between $1 million and $1.5 million. Right. And those numbers only get bigger as you trade. And so I honestly, like, that's whenever I speak to like a new trader, I'm like, just be disciplined. Because if you're not disciplined now and you're like, oh, it's $10 here, $50 there, or whatever. Those numbers get exponentially bigger over time. And it will, at some point, you end up hitting a number where you can't overcome it psychologically, and you're done. And so, like, anytime I see people that are super successful in trading, it's that discipline, right? And being able to stick, have a plan and stick to it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like every a lot of people we have who are risk takers are have made their wealth trading and stuff like that. Also, the same discipline, patience, and just like somebody in the comment section, discipline's everything in life in every scenario. I mean, I think that's true. Once you have discipline, you have an edge on, like, I don't know, 99% of the population, because most people don't have discipline.
You don't even have to be that smart. If you have discipline and you just same plan, you just fucking re-execute that plan with the same discipline. Like, I actually think discipline and the mental side of it are just even more important than being smart. This is why you can give it to the fucking trend following AI stuff. Like, it doesn't require
compounds, right? Yeah, exactly. Those things compound with your mental state and then your health, all that shit. I mean, like, I still struggle with it all the time. I'm sure a lot of most traders do. It's not easy.